quote the French philosopher Maurice Merleau-Ponty, back in his big work, Phenomenology of Perception, he says, the body is our general means of having a world. This is very different from the singularity guys. Ray Kurzweil, who's now top guy engineering at Google, who we've had on this show, who talks about not even having a body one day, sort of merging with computer and leaving the corporeal behind. That's fine by him.
We are creatures of the earth. We're not – I think what those guys want to think of us as is these little dots on GPS maps. But that's not what we are. We're people in bodies, animals in bodies, and we get satisfaction from interacting with the world. You know, what Merleau-Ponty was saying is that by expanding our skills, we also expand the meaning of our life, our ability to interact deeply with the world and to find satisfaction there. And tools, technologies can play a big role in that. We can design tools that actually bring us out into the world and allow us to expand our potential and expand our talent. Or we can adopt software that turns us into observers of screens. And this is a big choice that is out ahead of us now, and that actually, without even thinking about it, we're determining the course we're taking with the choices we make right now.
I can't resist going just a bit here to the poetic. You've got a wonderful passage where you look at Robert Frost when he was up in Derry, New Hampshire, writing, finding his voice, as you say, that distinctive voice, plain-spoken, conversational, but also sly and dissembling in a way. But in A Boy's Will, that collection, he has a poem called Mowing. Takes me back, but it's got, you know, he opens it with, this is a man out in his field. He's cutting the alfalfa to make hay there. And it's the old style scythe, the long blade that you have to swing rhythmically again and again. And the poem goes, there was never a sound beside the wood but one, and that was my long scythe whispering to the ground, sort of immersed in that repetitive labor motion. And he comes to this line, Robert Frost in Mowing, the fact is the sweetest dream that labor knows. The fact of what, Nicholas?
Well, I wish I could completely unpick that line, but fortunately it remains somewhat mysterious in a beautiful way. But I think what Frost is getting at is that acting in the world is the source of beauty, the source of satisfaction, the source of transcendence even. Ironically, it's about, you know, being part of the world that allows us to transcend our everyday worries and fears and so forth. And it's a beautiful explanation of how being deeply engaged in work using a tool, the scythe, you can't cut hay or with your fingers, it's very hard, enlarges us. I think the big challenge for us is how do we take that engagement? How do we take the use, you know, the model of the farmer with a scythe being completely deeply engaged in his work? How do we transfer that to our use of computers and software? And I think it's possible, but I think it really requires us to challenge the dominant design ethic, to challenge some of those folks in Silicon Valley who don't much like human beings in their bodies, and to take a different approach.
You're right. I must say, rather beautifully yourself, and let me read from it, about Robert Frost's poem, Mowing, describing what's going on there. You write, he's a farmer, a man doing a hard job on a still hot summer day. He's not dreaming of idle hours or easy gold, quoting Frost's poem there. His mind is on his work, the bodily rhythm of the cutting, the weight of the tool in his hands, the stalks piling up around him. He's not seeking some greater truth beyond the work. The work is the truth. Nicholas Carr's interpretation there of Robert Frost in Mowing. We're talking about automation and human skills, maybe the human soul. Brian, in New Orleans, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. Well, I'm a photographer, and one of the problems that we're facing in photography is digital photography and the constant updating of cameras and how cheap they've become to the public. So everybody's a photographer now. It's causing our price point to be driven down by Craigslist photographers. And then also the market of photographers is being saturated by people who don't know how to use their cameras. So people are just kind of putting their hands in technology and allowing themselves to go out there and do the job that people have trained for a very long time to learn how to do very well.
So in this case, even if you yourself don't embrace the automation that a digital camera represents, you're still being, what, driven out of work or challenged by the mass adoption?
Well, I do definitely use digital cameras. I'm a wedding photographer. I wouldn't be able to do it without digital cameras. I think it's just unfortunate that technology has kind of made people ignorant to how photography actually works, light, exposure of light, because no one is learning these techniques anymore. They don't question. The camera makes all the decisions for them.
Boy, and if it weren't there. Brian, I appreciate your call from New Orleans. West Palm Beach, Florida. Maria, you're on.
Yes. Okay, my comment is that unfortunately, either this whole technological progress has been very short-sighted because we have a extremely antiquated electrical grid and we have satellites that have a shelf life that are orbiting the Earth. And if there were some catastrophes, we've seen them, or shorting out or falling down, our lifestyle, we wouldn't know how to communicate. We wouldn't know how to do much of anything because we've become so reliant on this technology. So
we'd be ninnies, kind of back in the Stone Age. You have to figure it all out again. Maria, you've got a point. Let me get one more. I appreciate your call, Maria. Derek in San Marcos, Texas. Derek, you're our last caller. Thanks for being there.
Oh, thank you, Tom. The gentleman was talking about work, the work of a human being. Maybe what we need to be doing is, changing our priorities from the practical kinds of things that everybody's been talking about all hour long mm-hmm. to the things human beings can do, but we never have.
Like what?
Stopping killing each other, feeding the hungry, like caring for the suffering, all the things that have defied our abilities for thousands of years.
So let the computer build the bridge, and we'll go out and be saintly. Hard to know. Thanks for calling. Nicholas Carr, what if the power goes out? What if we were freed from these tasks to do higher level things? Where do you see it going?
I think at its best, automation, like mechanization before it, can push us to higher things. And one way to do that is to automate tasks that we've already mastered. Use a calculator to automate arithmetic and mathematics that you've already learned, and then you can build on that. Too often, though, we're using automation simply to displace our need to learn. And so you use the calculator to do the math and the arithmetic, and then the automation prevents you from rising higher. So if we use these powerful technologies wisely, if we respect human skill and say, first we have to learn deeply certain sophisticated tasks, and then when they become automatic for us ourselves, we can begin to automate them with machines, and that kind of provides us a step up the ladder of skills. I think that's the smart way to do it. The smart way to do it isn't to say anything that a computer can do, a computer should be doing it and humans shouldn't be doing it, because that's just kind of a naive approach to what actually – how we develop skills, how we achieve satisfaction in our lives. It's not by being freed up from things. It's by mastering things and then moving up slowly the ladder of skill to even higher things.
Who's going to promote that approach? Is Silicon Valley going to approach the learn it first, or they're just as happy if we rely on the automation?
I think it's the public and the way we use the technology and the choices we make about which technology we buy and which technology we don't.
Nick Carr, you always make us think, and we're grateful for that. what was that again? The chief scaredy cat of the information age? Maybe, but maybe not. Maybe a smart observer here. We appreciate your being with us today. The new book is The Glass Cage, Automation and Us. Nicholas Carr in New York, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tom. I appreciate it.
Listeners, thanks for being here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.